Lance, how are you?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
Well, I'm doing good. It's looking a lot like November out there. You know, when we start the show back in late August, early September, there's lots of daylight left after we're done. And now the sun is set. The clouds are getting dark. It's evening time. And it's time for some exciting football down the stretch to see who makes the playoffs and wins conference championships and all that stuff.
Well, yeah, for sure. Just and a heads up too. Next week, when we're recording, we do have fall back, so the light will be a little different. But I've got an event, so we may be recording late into the wee hours. We may get sleepy, Chris Callum. So just a heads up.
So to all of our listeners, you know, Lance has a second job. He moonlights, actually a third job if you count this one.
Yeah,
and I allow for the fact that Lance's schedule is going to be all over the map. And so I showed the flexibility and grace to deal with that. So I just want people to know the hardships that I go through in order to put out this high quality podcast.
And just also as a note, Chris lives in the Pacific time zone, so everything's way earlier for him. So it's not too big of an ordeal, but that is, I guess that's a true fact. He's very willing to put up his very overscheduled day. Yeah, I very much appreciate it.
I was wondering, have you even switched time zones? Is Eastern Montana still Central Time, or are you actually back in Mountain Time?
Nah, we're Mountain. We're right on the tip of Mountain Time. So I'm 7 miles into Mountain Time, so that means in the summer, the mornings get real. It gets light. You start seeing light before 4 a.m. some mornings.
Well, that's how I like
which
it.
Is a wild scene.
I like those early mornings. I mean,
If you cross right into North Dakota on the edge of the Central Time Zone, it's still daylight, like 10:45 p.m. at the end of summer. It's pretty sweet.
Well, Lance, get ready to get into the show.
I'd say so.
All right, let's do it then. Greetings, listeners, and welcome to week 9 of the FCS Wedge podcast. This is episode 297, also called our recap show each week. I'm Chris Callum from Cheney, Washington. With me is Lance Burnt from Bainville, Montana. The handsome fellow making it sound really good behind the board is Troy Burnt over in Missoula. We're going to recap some of last week's games. We're going to take a look at the AnyGivenSaturday.com poll in this episode, and then we'll also have an episode this week where we'll preview the upcoming games for this weekend. So, Lance, you're up first. You get to handle the big one. South Dakota State 20, South Dakota 17 in overtime. I caught the end of this one. It was both teams looked pretty evenly matched.
Sorry, listeners. For some reason, Chris keeps taking his hat off, but I think he's got it back on now. But yeah, for my review of the game, it was kind of a wild one. The Coyotes had them on the ropes. They get a scoop and score late, a nice little fumble return touchdown late in the fourth quarter, 14-14. Then they force, I believe, a three and out. Yeah, three and out, and they get the ball back, and they drive down the field. And it's like, wow, South Dakota's going to win this game. Then they kind of lose some yards. I think they lost 5 yards trying to set themselves up for the field goal, and then they miss the field goal. South Dakota here, they get a chance to win on the road. Huge rivalry game, big chance for an upset. I mean, they don't get these chances too often, and they miss the field goal. Ball game over. No, it goes to overtime. This time they make the field goal, but then, of course, South Dakota State gets it and scores a touchdown. No concerns whatsoever. They did have to convert a fourth down, but then once they did, it was curtains for the Coyotes. Good performance for them. The one thing with the Coyotes, and I would just love to go back in time to all the Sam Houston State days when the Missouri Valley fans would just mercilessly berate Sam Houston, because at this point they'd have like 5 wins because they had a D2 game on their schedule and they hadn't beaten a team with more than 2 wins yet or something like that. Well, if you look at South Dakota's schedule right now, it's very similar to a Sam Houston back then. They started the year against Northern State. That's an in-state D2 program, not even a good D2 program. They're like a They're like a bad, would be a comparison. Let's see. They're like what Cal Poly is this year. That might even be uplifting them too much. Maybe a lower Western Illinois. Northern State's like Western Illinois this year. Well, anyways, they have five, because they had their game against Portland State was a loss. They only have five FCS wins right now. They still have to play North Dakota and North Dakota State. It's not out of the expectation for them to finish the season with only six FCS wins. Yes, they will have that D2 win over a bad Northern State or whatever, but like, here's this team we're talking about, a top four seed, and they're on the edge of, like, we don't do that non-counter thing anymore, but imagine if this was a year. It's a little interesting. But anyways, big win for South Dakota State. They need response. They're still sitting right on that line of, hey, top three seed, maybe top two if Montana State or North Dakota State slip up.
Well, it's been an interesting year in more ways than one. And in defense of South Dakota's schedule, they do, believe it or not, have the 11th ranked strength of schedule overall in the country, you know, which places them ahead of Montana State, for example, who's at 50. UC Davis is at 32. Montana's at 30. So, yeah, you know, I think you look at it and it's pretty obvious that they don't have a lot, really any high quality wins. But they also have played, you know, overall, at least according to Massey, a fairly decent strength of schedule.
I think a big part of that is just South Dakota State hypes up that schedule, and then also Wisconsin. Because, I mean, you look at it on face value or whatever, and if there's just no one above two. I guess Youngstown State did get them a win above three wins, or above at 3-6. But anyways, you go on. Next game, go ahead.
So the next game we're going to cover, and I'll take this one, Incarnate Word 34, Southeastern Louisiana 31. You know, we thought this might be a close game, and it was. To be honest, Incarnate Word won this on defense, which is not what we're used to seeing. Marcus Brown had a scoop and score. The Cards picked up a second defensive touchdown when Mason Chambers returned a pick 50 yards for a score in the fourth quarter. Incarnate Word D also had an additional pick late to seal the win. Both teams were held under 300 yards of total offense, so look at the defensive-minded black and blue Southland all of a sudden. With their toughest games out of the way, the Southland may come down to the Stephen F. Austin game for Incarnate Word at the end of the season.
Well, by that, Stephen F. Austin has two losses in conference already, so that wouldn't play in a picture unless they'd have to lose to someone else, because they'd still win all the tiebreakers.
I thought they just had one loss.
No, they lost to both Southeastern Louisiana and McNeese.
And who else?
McNeese.
Oh, I missed that one. Yeah, I knew they'd lost to Sela, but I didn't know they'd lost to Meese. So
yeah, they lost to McNeese when they still had Clifton. They still had Clifton McDowell. Now they've got one of the best names out there in football. Goodness gracious! But I can't do that and then back away. His last name is Six Killer. Camden Six Killer is the starting quarterback right now for McNeese with Clifton out. I don't know if Clifton got benched because he did kind of suck, or if he got hurt. But
well, the Six Killer name is known in the Pacific Northwest, right? Sonny Six Killer was a standout quarterback for the University of Washington, I think, back in the 70s. I think he led him to a Rose Bowl title. Could be. There's an uncle, too, that I believe that played. So, yeah, it is a great name. No question about it. So let's move next to kind of a surprise, kind of a disappointment. North Dakota, they had righted the ship back in the top 10. They lose to Youngstown State 41-40. What happened here? How did the Penguins pull this off?
Just a heads up, I can hear that humming again. You got your AC on?
No.
Oh.
Quiet as a mouse, Lance. But you heard it last week, and on the final product, it sounded clean to me. So it might be from your end.
Oh, interesting. Anyways.
Maybe Mika's humming a tune in the background.
Yeah, that could be it. It sounds very mechanical, though. Well, anyways, this Youngstown State victory in the conference, we've seen these across the football landscape this year. Abilene Christian, they go down. Goodness gracious. They lost to North Alabama, I believe. Central Arkansas almost lost to West Georgia. Montana lost to Weber State. The results like that out there, kind of across multiple conferences, where these teams have just kind of these sudden, super questionable losses. So it was North Dakota's turn. They go to Youngstown State, and Youngstown State, not that bad of a team, just is really choked at times this year in games where they've shown up and just gotten obliterated, or they've shown up and just kind of didn't step up late. That's what they did against Duquesne. They lose. Did against Missouri State. They lose by one score. And then they got slaughtered by South Dakota State and lost to South Dakota. Well, UND rolls into town, and Youngstown says, we're going to make this a game. They run for 334 yards on the Fighting Hawks. Just a terrible defensive performance for UND. Their quarterback, Simon Rompo, puts up three touchdowns, 212 yards, but when you run for 334, that's just going to decimate a team, especially just the big scores that were happening. So North Dakota gets this to overtime as Youngstown kicks a field goal, I believe, with like 7 seconds to go in the game, sends it to overtime. Youngstown scores right away, puts up an extra point. North Dakota scores, goes for two, and fails. And that's it. They end, they lose, road game. Tough loss for them because it kind of takes them out of that seeding conversation. At 9-3, they get seeded, but remember, folks, they still have to play South Dakota State, South Dakota, and Illinois State to finish the season. They don't win one of those games, they're done. So North Dakota on thin ice, with once it's all said and done, they'll probably have the toughest schedule in the country. I think Massey even has that feature, where the SSF means strength schedule in the future. So let me pull that up real quick. Strength schedule future. North Dakota will be number five, but they're pretty close. Yeah. Just because with the way things have played out, you'd think it'd be higher because Iowa State, I wonder if this counts FBS games. Who knows? Because Iowa State's much higher than Oklahoma State. And North Dakota has to play South Dakota State, where South Dakota State doesn't have to play themselves. So that's the curiosity. Anyways, tough loss for North Dakota. We'll see if they can turn things around.
Yeah, great points on what to expect from them going forward. But it seems like they tend to be a inconsistent team, capable of pulling off some upsets. And I think they pulled off a few over the years, sometimes a little bit later in the season. So don't be surprised if they do enough to get in the playoffs. And also, I just want to mention, since I don't think we'll be covering them in either of this week's episodes, Southeast Missouri State is the outlier among the elite teams right now as far as strength of schedule. Their future strength of schedule is 82nd. So as good a season as they've had, you know, that's a far cry from anybody else in the top 20 or so. So just something to consider. Next game, we're going to look at, you know, Lance, you'd question Mercer's ability to win big games. I don't know if I qualify this as a big game, but Western Carolina's 4-4. They've played well at times this year, and Mercer goes in and gets a 10-point win, 44-34. And they did it by scoring 24 straight in the middle quarter. So they fell behind, and then they rallied back. This is their ninth straight win over the Catamounts, so they have quite a winning streak going against Western Carolina. And Mercer did it almost exclusively on the ground. They put up 340 yards rushing. That was led by 228 yards from Dwayne McKee. I think he also had a couple of touchdowns. The teams combined for 1,130 yards of total offense. So definitely a shootout. I think that's what we predicted. But another question rises, and that is, what's happened to the Mercer D, Lance?
Well, first back, I got to walk back a comment. Northern State from the South Dakota State comment. They're actually 5-4 right now, playing pretty well. They started 0-4. I went to college in that conference. So they had started pretty well, but they've turned it around, or started poorly, turned it around. Anyways, Mercer, the one thing you got to expect, especially this is a comment you usually say most often, you know, the Southland doesn't play much for competition, especially non-conference games. So non-conference, they went out and played Presbyterian, Bethune, Chattanooga, the Citadel, Wofford. These are their games down the line. Princeton, they're not facing a high-powered offense in there. Chattanooga is the one, and that's a game to go back and watch. What did they do to stop them? Were they couldn't in the other ones. But all the other teams they're playing, they're not playing offensive juggernauts. They're playing some of the worst offenses around out there. And so now they face some legitimate quarterbacks. Quincy Crittenden, we saw that in the playoffs a couple years ago, his coming out party, just kind of going nuts in the first round. And then for Samford, and then now Western Carolina with Cole Gonzalez. But the thing that's different about this week is Mercer hangs in there. They respond to those offensive punches or whatever, and they put up points of their own. And I think that's the key. The resilience we saw from Mercer this week, it's kind of showing them that even if you jump out on us on offense, we're going to put something forward. We're a team to be feared as we get into these playoffs. They take care of business against East Tennessee State this next week, and they've got probably two flops of games, and then they'll get obliterated by Alabama. But they're looking at sitting what would be the record? They're looking at sitting 10-2 heading into the playoffs. Definite top 8 seed, I would assume, with that kind of record.
Yeah, perhaps. And I want to clarify too, Mercer is in fact in the SoCon, not the Southland, as you tried to suggest.
Oh, SoCon. That's just a misstep of words. We're talking about weak conferences.
Not that Lance ever makes mistakes. I'll know that it's only Chris who makes mistakes, but I just wanted to point that out. That's your one a year, Lance. Now, you're not allowed anymore.
Yeah.
Next game we're going to take a look at. Lance, it's time to break up the Seawolves. Stony Brook 35, William & Mary 13, Stony Brook 6-2. Winnable games ahead of them. What happened in this one, and do they have a shot at the playoffs?
Well, I will say this forever. This is a result of the CAA. They're playing well. I think William & Mary's just getting exposed. Teams are figuring out how to stop them. These teams are playing the conference with them. They kind of figure out things or whatever. And they're kind of just choking, so to say. William & Mary, 4 turnovers just from their quarterbacks. And then they lose another fumble as well. 5 forced turnovers for Stony Brook. And they're playing well right now. We've got Roland Dempster. Let's see. I think he's a transfer, but I got to make sure. No, he's been at Stony Brook the whole time. But he's doing pretty well running the show, running back for them. He put up 144, 2 touchdowns. On the Tribe, and then just consistent game from the quarterback play as well. He's the transfer. He transferred in from Georgetown from last year, Tyler Noop. And they're simply just doing the right things that they need to. They have that game against Villanova that they let get away late. It was closer as the game went on. But since then, they've turned it up offensively, putting up 52 on Towson, now 35 on William & Mary, a team that is kind of took things slow a couple times early, but I mean, they dominated Morgan State. And it's a Morgan State team that otherwise has had just a bunch of close games. Namely, Towson was just 5 points, North Carolina Central just 9, Hampton, who's like 6-3 right now, or 5-3 or something like that, they beat. And so this is Stony Brook team that's playing solid, but they're playing a lot of just middle-of-the-road teams, so it's just hard to be like, are they good? Are they not? I don't know. Are they going to get in the playoffs? I don't know. They've got a winnable schedule ahead of them. Bryant, Albany, New Hampshire, Monmouth. Chances are there to finish at 10-2, possibly tie for the CAA title, depending on Rhode Island and Richmond, but they're playing well right now.
And as you suggest, welcome to the CAA, because if you look at William & Mary, you know, and asked, do you have a shot still at the playoffs after this loss? Well, they're 5-3. They close out the season with 1-7 North Carolina A&T, 2-6 Elon, 2-6 Bryant, and then they do play Richmond at the end. Richmond's one of the better CAA teams. It's a rivalry game. They've got a shot in that one. So you're looking at a 8-4, maybe even 9-3 William & Mary still. And this is going to be true for a number of teams in the CAA. So much to Lance's chagrin. And speaking of the CAA, the next game, Rhode Island continuing to play good defense. They win over Maine 24-14. So this is their 6th straight win. And a week after hanging 35 on Villanova, Maine was held to just 57 yards rushing by the Rams. They also notched 7 sacks on the day. And that came from 6 different pass rushers. So great team defense, especially from the front 7. And then on offense, they didn't have to do much themselves. They were led with 87 yards rushing and a score from Malik Grant. And again, kind of the same question, Lance. You know, can the Rams win out? It looks like they can. If they do, would they pass by a two-loss Missouri Valley or a two-loss Big Sky team as far as seeding goes?
And that'll be interesting because they won't have – I mean, they'll be undefeated the CAA, and it'll be where we see how respected the new CAA is for the committee. Because yeah, the Delaware win would be their most impressive, but otherwise they would not have a win in the top 25. I mean, even close to the top 25. Their best would be New Hampshire. Holy Cross could win out, most likely, you would think. Their favorite to win out. So they'd be a playoff team at 7-5, and Rhode Island will have beaten them. But otherwise, yeah, it'll be where we see how does the committee see the CAA if Rhode Island's at 11-1.
Yeah, it has the potential to be a huge mess near the top of the CAA for sure. So, Lance, you ready to cover the poll?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, so the anygivensaturday.com poll is out, and we have North Dakota State Bison still at number one, Montana State at two, South Dakota State at three, UC Davis Aggies at four, South Dakota Coyotes at five. They fell just a little ways, not much. And then you have Southeast Missouri, Incarnate Word, University of Idaho Vandals, Tarleton Texans, and the Montana Grizzlies to round out the top 10. I imagine there's probably a team or two that you might have in the top 10 that the voters don't.
Yes, maybe. Goodness, I know I don't have Montana in the top 10. I think there's still 12 or something like that. Let me pull up mine, 2024. Montana State, NDSU, South Dakota State, South Dakota, Davis, SEMO, Central Arkansas still up there. I give Central Arkansas credit for their loss against Arkansas State. I count that as a win, so I have them in my top 10. That would be the one. Chattanooga I have pretty high up there. I think I have them in 8. So those are the two that I have in there. And then take out, I think Tarleton. No, the Tarleton's a high for me. They're 11, just because who have they beaten yet? And they've had more closer games than like Chattanooga just kind of stomping teams, lost to Mercer. Yeah, no real big discrepancies for me. It's just kind of at that point where it's there's things to be played out in the next couple of weeks that are really going to shake things up around here. But yeah, it's kind of interesting to see how close North Dakota State and Montana State are in this poll, and then also how close UC Davis and South Dakota are. But a lot of people are waiting for that South Dakota win. South Dakota, I mean, so much is that Sam Houston from 10 years ago right now, where people are saying they look so good. On some people are saying the eye test. You got to look at the eye test. This team is legit. And then other people are saying, well, what about the paper test, where we're 8 games into the season and they still haven't beaten a team with more than 3 wins. So it's that back and forth that you can't really pull forward yet. Whereas UC Davis, they've beaten Idaho. South Dakota State's beaten South Dakota. North Dakota State's beaten South Dakota State. Montana State's beaten – North Dakota State's beaten North Dakota, too. Montana State's beaten an FBS team and Idaho. So South Dakota has to get a big win to belong in that category. Same with Southeast Missouri State. Their win against Southern Illinois and – well, Southern Illinois has really dropped off the map, but they did beat Tennessee Martin. So they have a top 20 win at least. But, yeah, that's the case there.
It's just a really weird year all around. There's just some perplexing stuff going on because, you know, what you were describing there in South Dakota and some of the other teams, we don't know as much as we should for a, you know, a top 10 team. Well, Central Arkansas is another one. Their only win against a team with a winning record was who? Lamar. They beat Lamar, who's 5-3, and then the rest of their wins are against teams with losing records. So even Central Arkansas, who's highly regarded, I think there's still question marks for them. So it's been a strange year in that regard. And I think you also see it sometimes in the weeks in trying to select, you know, games that we're going to cover. You know, there's been a couple of times where it's hard to come up with, you know, really marquee matchups where you have two ranked teams playing or teams that are, you know, towards the top of their conference playing. And it also seems like there's fewer upsets. So just kind of a strange year, in my opinion. Let's move on to the next 10. We're going to go Mercer Bears at 11, Central Arkansas at 12, Rhode Island at 13, Chattanooga at 14. By the way, I agree with you on Chattanooga. I think they're a pretty good football team. North Dakota Fighting Hawks at 15, Richmond, Villanova at 16 and 17, Missouri State 18, Tennessee Martin at 19, and Abilene Christian to round out the top 20. Any thoughts there, Lance?
Yeah, I'm trying to see. Villanova, I know I have lower just because who have you beaten? They did beat Stony Brook, though. So that's the thing. And then just the tough loss to Maine as Maine flounders elsewhere. North Dakota, yeah, it's very close to my poll here. I think I have Missouri State higher. No big arguments. Abilene Christian hasn't really been able to pull off something big, but they also sit in an area of the poll where no one really has. It's just like, how are you doing right now? But they did beat Central Arkansas. I scratched that. They do have a solid win, but it's just a tough point because, like Richmond, how much do you judge them for losing to Wofford earlier in the year? And they've only really – and is Delaware any good? Delaware's only played East Coast FCS teams, so how do we know if they're good? They're just – they have a good record. So does that mean they're a team that we should hype up Richmond for having beaten? Or is this – I mean, it's tough. They're probably the trickiest case in that bunch for how to rate – just because, I mean, look at Delaware's line. They beat Albany, Maine, Monmouth, Sacred Heart, Penn, North Carolina A&T, and Bryant. So it's just, sure, they're 6-1, 7-1, but is it really that great of a win? I don't know. But that's the way it is. Otherwise, no big complaints. What's interesting, Tennessee Martin's very highly computer ranked. So Massey puts out a composite, which is just all the ranking systems combined, so to say. He's got 23 on there now, so he doesn't have any of the human votes yet. But Tennessee Martin's at 14 in all of those combined. They're ahead of Mercer, ahead of Delaware, at Villanova, Chattanooga, Central Arkansas. So for some reason, the computers really like Tennessee Martin right now. But otherwise, they're a little bit lower elsewhere.
And I guess just to follow up on what I was saying previously, that's kind of what you're seeing with positions 10, you know, on down. It's tough to find a team with a high quality win. It's a bunch of 2-3 and 4 loss maybe teams, you know, who have beat other, you know, 2-3-4 loss teams, and then mostly teams that are underperforming and below 500. Which it seems like this time of the year, you usually are going to start stacking up some ranked or wins over ranked opponents, that kind of stuff. And we haven't seen that just yet. So to round out the top 25, we have East Tennessee State at 21, Stony Brook 22, lurking Illinois State, Redbirds at 23, Dartmouth is at 24, William & Mary is at 25, and then just outside looking in, Tennessee State Tigers at 26, North Carolina Central Eagles at 27, Harvard Crimson at 28. They have a big game with Dartmouth this week. Duquesne Dukes, 29, and Northern Arizona Lumberjacks, number 30.
Yeah, William & Mary is really my only one, but then it comes to the point, like, who would you put in there? Also, Dartmouth. Dartmouth, to me, they finally had an okay win this last weekend, but they remind me of, I keep forgetting the year. What was that, 2011 Lehigh? Maybe 2012 Lehigh? It was that year where they went 10-1 and missed out on the playoffs because their schedule, they didn't play anybody and then just kept winning by 7 every game. So, like, you look at Dartmouth, they're 6-0 right now, but they beat Merrimack by 2. They beat Penn by 3. Yale by 1. Central Connecticut by 4. And now Columbia by 3. I mean, they haven't blown out the teams that other ranked teams would probably be blowing out. So that's the conundrum for me with Dartmouth. Sometimes I do rank an Ivy team. Princeton, I remember, got very high on mine because they were just kind of killing it. But Dartmouth has yet to impress me yet, but also no one else really has. So you kind of just kind of draw from the bottom of the barrel down there. Watch out for Southern Utah. They've got chances ahead of them. They're a tough team. Games are basically a coin flip every night in the United Conference. And so they've got games in front of them where they can knock some teams off. Upcoming this weekend, we'll even talk about them. But they're kind of a snake in the grass, or another metaphor that you want to come up with. That they are that right now.
Yeah, another one of those teams that fits that bill is Northern Arizona. They have four very winnable games remaining. They're heavily favored in two of those. The other one's against Eastern Washington at home at the Walk-Up Sky Dome. That there's 60% chance of winning, according to Massey. I would make that even higher right now. In Weber State is a toss-up, essentially, but they also get Weber State at home. So Arizona could really sneak into the mix as far as net large berth goes, and they've had a nice season so far. So that's going to wrap us up for the poll. Lance, a little bit of extension on the poll stuff, because voters do get a chance to vote for most significant win each week and most significant loss. This week, the AGS pollsters had South Dakota State as the most significant win, and North Dakota Fighting Hawks was the most significant loss. Any problem with those two selections?
Well, I wouldn't call South Dakota State most significant win. They were favored to win that game. They're playing at home. So that one kind of threw me off a little bit. But you look down the line for another more significant win, and it's tough. Stony Brook, I think I said, just because it was an upset win. William & Mary, a ranked team, they dominate. They win by three touchdowns. I think that was, in my opinion, the most significant. Or Holy Cross. They've lost a lot of close games. They're 4-5 right now, but non-conference, they scheduled tough. They go to Rhode Island, lose by three, lost to New Hampshire by one, probably their worst loss, and that's not that bad of a loss. Yale may be their worst one. And then they lose to Syracuse and Harvard by one. This is a team that's undefeated in the Patriot, and they've already beaten arguably the toughest team on the road against Lafayette. They just have Lehigh, Bucknell at home, and then at Georgetown. So that's a Holy Cross team that's probably going to finish 7-5. So their road win against Lafayette, I think they're the defending champs. Lafayette was in the playoffs last year, yes. And so one of those two I'd call most significant, just because of the ramifications in their smaller conferences. So most significant loss, definitely North Dakota. Go on the road and lose to a team with only two wins. When you're in the seeding conversation, that's going to be a pretty heavy loss. There weren't any other super big ones. Not many ranked teams lost this last weekend, actually.
No, just a few. Last question, Lance. Just simply because you brought this up earlier regarding surprising upsets that still might happen. Give me one more major upset, predict one, that you think is going to happen at any point with the remainder of the regular season. Give me somebody that's going to go on the road and get a big, huge win against a ranked conference foe, or maybe at home, the upset, somebody that's in the top 10, that type of thing. You got any?
Well, this is hater talk here or whatever, but who always in history does well against Montana State? Always. Except maybe the last couple years. Chris, who always does well against Montana State? You know this one.
Well, I'm guessing that you're going to say Eastern. We did have a good long stretch against them, but...
Yeah, Eastern Washington, 32-13. Head-to-head against Montana State. They've lost the last three, but before that, they were just killing them for many, 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 many years. Almost a better record than the Grizz the last 30 years against the Bobcats. But so that's the one. It's on the road. They're playing hot right now. They did have a bye week, though, but that was just the one that kind of – I was looking at just that could be a monumental upset, but unfortunately Montana State's not looking ahead to anything. They have to finish with UC Davis and Montana, kind of a juggernaut back to back, especially having to go all the way out to Davis. But That's one I see. I haven't really looked at games past this weekend. I could see Illinois State losing to Youngstown. Youngstown playing revitalized. Oh, this is the one. Villanova goes on the road to Hampton. And I think we're talking about it in our recap.
Yes, it's this week.
But Hampton's playing solid right now. They took Rhode Island to two overtimes at home. They smoked Elon. Elon's not good, but every team that's beaten Elon this season, ironically, gets ranked right after it. Happened in New Hampshire, Richmond, East Tennessee State, I think Western Carolina too. All four of those teams got ranked right after beating them in some capacity. But that'd be mine. I see Hampton kind of sneaking off a win out there. Otherwise, I'd have to look at the games in future weeks. But those are the ones this weekend.
For me, it's North Dakota. I think they finished the season with three ranked opponents, ranked at least right now. That's South Dakota State at home, South Dakota at home, and they're on the road to finish the season at Illinois State. That one would be the more likely of the three for them to win, and they're going to need a win. But I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'm terrible at predictions, as you know, but I'm going to pick the Fighting Hawks to upset the Jackrabbits on the 9th of November.
That's a heavy pick there. You got to remember, it's not like North Dakota had its way with Montana. It got hot, and momentum's a little bit different than strength. I just don't see, at least on paper, they're solid. I mean, they're watching the North Dakota State game. It's just like, this team is outmatched. So, but yeah, upset's an upset. They could do it out there, but that's just my opinion, my two cents, so to say.
All right, well, that's going to do it for this week's recap show. For Lance Burnt, I'm Chris Callum. Thanks to our producer, Troy Burnt. And we'll have a preview show also coming out this week, so stay tuned.